తస్స భగవతో అర్హతో సమ్మా సంబుద్ధస్స నమో తస్స భగవతో అర్హతో సమ్మా సంబుద్ధస్స నమో తస్స భగవతో అర్హతో సమ్మా సంబుద్ధస్స బుద్ధం ధమ్మం సంఘం నమస్సామి. We've been on retreat for a few days. Seems very settled and a lot of stillness. Quiet, peaceful. Of course, I don't know if that's actually how it is for you. But after a few days we can maybe consider, if we think back, say, a week ago, how was it? How was it then and how is it now? Just after a few days of practice. And what's the difference? We make some effort with sticking with a simple routine, a lot of formal practice, keeping noble silence, and we should consider what's the result, even just a few days. Maybe the mind settled down somewhat. Some degree of calmness. Maybe a little more clarity, perhaps. And it's good to remind ourselves, you know, why we're doing this, why we spend time, put a lot of effort actually into setting up the retreat situation. We're going to spend a long time on retreat. And to remind ourselves we're interested in the Dhamma, in the Buddha's teaching. And in that intention for freedom, for liberation, or however we hold that, the way that the goal of the practice is talked about. Nibbana, or the end of suffering, the end of the cycle of rebirth. Whatever means most to us in that, maybe just as a path of less suffering, way to be happier, more at ease. So if our intention is for that, then to make that clear often, just to remember it, perhaps particularly when we come to spend a lot of time in practice. What's my intention here? What am I trying to do? What am I looking for? What am I trying to get? What am I hoping to achieve? And rather than making those some sort of distant goal, and something off in the future. And what would they mean if I experience that right now? What is it in the present? What might that mean? To be free, the heart released. If we look in our experience, say when we're sitting, or particularly beginning of a period of sitting, I like to try and do this, I remember to do this. I like to make this the context for the practice. Really try and feel into how in my body, how in my awareness, what would this be like? How is this? And how does my current experience differ from it? And just what is present? What is absent? And I certainly find for myself it's very important to hold this sense of kindness and well-being, sense of well-wishing for myself, for all those that I know, for the planet, for the universe, to remember that what would freedom be like? What is freedom without that well-being? Is it some sort of cold and uncaring, unfeeling sort of state? I don't think so. But it can take a while. Sometimes it's not immediate. We can incline our attention or put our attention in a particular direction, but we don't necessarily get an immediate result. But intention is the key, because the mind follows intention. So if we set up the conditions or circumstances, then these will support us. And sometimes we need to be very patient. Really taking the time to settle in and really, really feel and sense what is happening. What is going on in the present for us? So when we have a long retreat situation, it's very easy to get bored, get restless. We need to remind ourselves to come back and re-establish a sense of focus, tension. Bring the awareness back into the present moment. So with the practice, obviously, we probably each have different ways of practicing. Come across different methods, techniques, and we're probably also all familiar with the way that Lumpur likes to encourage us, which is with no particular method, no particular technique. Placing the emphasis on just simple mindfulness. Using whatever supports us, whatever helps us to bring the attention into the present. Sound of silence he likes to talk about. Mindfulness of the breath, awareness of the body, whatever it is you like to use, and it, of course, it doesn't need to be just one thing. Personally, I'll use different practices, sometimes even within the same period of sitting. Bringing attention into the simple presence. Using something to collect attention. Some sort of focus helps to calm the mind. And to do that, we need to make some sort of effort. We need to be persistent, apply ourselves with that sort of kind, gentle persistence, and not a sort of nagging, you know, I must do this, I must come back to the breath, I must listen out for that sound of silence, I must come back to the body, notice what's happening in the body. A sort of gentle drawing in of attention, and doing it again and again. And I'm sure we've all heard these things many times. And beginning again, starting again, however often we need to. Re-establishing. But by making that sort of steady, persistent, but relaxed effort, then some steadiness arises in the mind, some calmness, some tranquility and peace. And with that, what I like to do with that effort is just take that however far it wants to go, or however far it seems to go before I guess if you find. You find some problems, some difficulty arises. I mean, hindrances come up. You just find I've been making this effort, and I'm practicing, say, with the breath, and don't seem to be getting anywhere. Or there's a degree of calmness, but then it doesn't seem to deepen, doesn't seem to go anywhere. And it doesn't matter how much effort I make. And so this is when we need to use a bit of wisdom and start to investigate. You know, rather than just applying a method or a technique, actually see what's happening, what's happening in the awareness that is around the meditation object. Where's the where is it things maybe not so comfortable in experience? You know, maybe there's some tensions. Maybe the mind's just distracted. Maybe some other feeling has arisen. It's beginning to predominate in attention. No matter how often we come back to the meditation object, the other is still there. Or we might find we're just getting really tense. Frustrated, irritable. So this is the time to open out the attention and actually see, well, what is going on? What is there? And we come to the practice with wanting to be free, wanting to be at ease. We follow the instructions on the packet, and we end up making lumpy porridge. Why is that? And that isn't what I was trying to do. And it's probably not because we've read the instructions wrongly. You know, they're fairly straightforward. But maybe we haven't learned how to stir the mix properly. And we have this really valuable teaching on the Four Noble Truths, the teaching on dukkha and the ending of dukkha. And of course what arises in practice is, sooner or later I imagine, is dukkha. And so the sort of paradox we have, we want to be free, we want to be free from dukkha, but there it is. Maybe even if our practice is going well, yes, there's some calmness, some ease, even some joy, contentment arising. We'll probably sooner or later still run into a sense of dissatisfaction, like it's not enough, there must be more to it than this. Am I just supposed to sit here for another 3 months just experiencing this? Isn't it going to get a bit boring after a while? So the encouragement is to investigate that dukkha. Dukkha is there to be understood. And what is it we're wanting? What is it we're not wanting? What are we trying to get? Trying to get away from. And it can be, it seems like there's something of a paradox because, of course, there are things we want. And we want the freedom. And that's why we do the practice. And yet, that wanting itself can become an obstacle at some point. It should take us a long way. We should something to make much of. You know, if we don't actually want something, we never set off on the way to find it on the path. But somewhere along the line, we need to let go of that as well. Maybe not the aspiration for Nibbana, I mean that we only let go of that right at the end. I know Lumpur likes to talk about realizing it in the present, and that's right. In the present we can let go of it. But if we forget that, we need to find our way back. We need to remember, we need to start again. Is it in the present or isn't it? Is there suffering or isn't there? If there's suffering, what is the origin? We examine that. As I was saying, what is it we're wanting, what are we not wanting? What are we identifying with? We chanted the Natalakkhana Sutta tonight. Well, what is it? What is it we identify with? It's me and mine, in these five khandhas, in body, feeling, perception, volition, consciousness. And this is what we can hold up in awareness, in that space of some calmness, some clarity. You know, within the mind, see the habitual thinking, ways we identify with the thinking mind. This being who I am, this being what I want, this being what I don't like. This being the right way to practice. See if we can find some space where thinking is just what it is. It is just the thinking mind. Not as something which we're trying to get rid of. We just actually want to see it for what it is. Something we don't need to believe in. Don't need to identify with. although we've probably all heard this many times before, to actually make this, to make it real, for the actual insights to arise, with that, you know, when we come across dukkha, when we find dukkha, it's like, get a sense something isn't right, something is not quite, it's not quite there, a dissatisfaction, whatever it is. It's not just like, you know, we can't just take it as an intellectual understanding, you know, we know the theory. But what makes the first noble truth the noble truth about suffering, about dukkha, is that really getting to understand it. And what is understanding? Is it maybe it is something, you know, okay, there's words we can put to it. Something cognitive might arise, but I often find sometimes before that there's something else we need to reach, like, I don't know, a different level. And it's not just about the rational, it's not just about what we know with our head. We have to know it with the heart. And that dukkha really needs to be accepted. Maybe like known in the round. You need to know all the edges of it, feel the whole of it. And that's the part which maybe isn't so easy, because it takes can take courage to do that. I mean, we maybe do this in small ways, but then there might be, you know, as we continue with retreat time, you know, maybe this retreat, or maybe in the years of practice we've done up until now, or practice in the future, we'll probably come across things and we just find, oh yes, I recognise this, I've come into this, come across this before, this sort of problem, this obstacle, or this experience in practice, and haven't really got beyond it. No, it's been there. I remember this from, you know, 2 years ago on retreat. And why is this? And why do things come back again? Well, because we haven't yet really understood them. And I'm not speaking here from saying that I have understood everything. I speak from my own experience. Now, I know that things, if they haven't really been dealt with, they'll come back. And maybe we've got some understanding has arisen, some freedom has arisen. But maybe there's more. And to get, or we need to recognize difficult to find the words to describe it. It's trying to say two things at once. Trying to find the to see if we actually have the capacity, the ability to encompass the whole of that dukkha or not. I mean, is the mind, is it strong enough, is it calm enough, is it clear enough, buoyant enough, content enough? If it isn't, then that's what we need to work on. There's no point in creating more confusion, plus more pain. We would do that if we go into that difficulty too much. And so, although it's to be understood, we actually need to recognize, is the capacity there for that understanding? That means being sensitive to what's actually happening as we come in touch with that pain. And how do we respond to it? Can we bear it? I suppose maybe that's the best phrase for it. Is it bearable? If it's bearable, then we can learn something from it. When it becomes unbearable or we've had enough, then the best thing we can do is to withdraw, come back to the meditation object, re-establish the awareness of that, re-establish some strength, some clarity, some peacefulness. Recognize that actually we don't need to spend all the time with dukkha. It's to be understood and at the right time. This is actually what the Fourth Noble Truth is about. Well, this is maybe one way of speaking about it, and because, you know, the Fourth Noble Truth, the Eightfold Path, talks about, you know, the eight factors, or the different skills, the different things which we can develop, put our attention on, work on, to strengthen the mind, strengthen the heart, as a way of deepening the understanding we have of the first three noble truths. So they work as a cycle, or something to be revisited again and again. We recognize dukkha, we recognize maybe in smaller ways, or maybe some of you have had some significant insights, maybe even in the last few days, or in your life so far. you have real confidence in First Noble Truth, Second Noble Truth, Third Noble Truth, the origin and the cessation. You've actually seen how this works. And the Fourth Noble Truth is the pattern for strengthening, as I say, and deepening the ability we have to acknowledge dukkha and to understand it, to see through to the craving, the underlying desire, craving mind, and to be able to let go. For quite a bit longer than I intended to, and haven't said most of the things which I thought I would say. I'll add just one more thing, which is about not taking ourselves too seriously. I thought of starting off by saying that, because usually when I find myself up on the high seat giving a talk, I get all anxious and I guess it all just comes out a bit really serious and heavy, and I think that having some sort of sense of humour is really important. Perhaps noticing the absurd, maybe the absurdity of 40 people sitting in a room quietly, and the absurdities of the mind. I think that was what I was thinking of earlier. Actually, was, you know, we can take our practice; it can all be so serious and. But actually the mind is absurd, and sometimes just to remind ourselves of that can be really useful too. You know, we're caught in some sort of thinking, negativity, beating ourselves up. It's just ridiculous. And I hope that during the course of the days that enough little incidents happen, whether they're when you're sitting on your zafu, walking on your meditation path, brushing your teeth, whatever, during the day, eating your meal, chopping the vegetables, enough things remind us of the absurdities, and we better not take it all too seriously. Maybe if we remember just that much, then maybe we'll experience a little more freedom. So I'll leave it there. I don't know.